It was a threat that could not be ignored. On April 8, 1869, the Union Pacific's Grenville Dodge and the Central Pacific's Collis Huntington met behind closed doors in Washington, D.C. On April 9th, after a full day of bitter argument, they agreed on a place where their tracks would meet. It was Promontory Summit, Utah, a desolate spot north of the Great Salt Lake, 690 miles from Sacramento, 1,086 miles from Omaha. The next day, Congress passed a resolution officially making Promontory Summit, often mistakenly referred to as Promontory Point, the place where the rails shall meet and connect and form one continuous line. With the linking site now officially chosen, both sides, determined to be the first to reach that now coveted spot, stepped up the pace as never before, and soon the construction of the Great Road took on a whole new look. For more than 6 years, the two companies had labored hundreds of miles away from each other. Now, in the vast, barren Utah territory, Central Pacific graders and track layers and their Union Pacific counterparts began to work within sight of one another. Work is being vigorously prosecuted on the UPPR and CPPR, the Deseret News reported. Both lines running near each other and occasionally crossing. The grading camps present the appearance of a mighty army. As far as the eye can reach, there is almost a continuous line of tents, wagons, and men. The grading gangs from the two companies were, in fact, now working so close together that when one of the gangs set off a blasting charge to loosen frozen earth, flying chunks of soil rained down on the heads of the other company's workers. It was not long before things got out of hand. Angered when some of their companions were injured by heavy flying debris, the Union Pacific's laborers began throwing clods of frozen earth at the Central Pacific's workers. Then they went after them with pickaxes. Not content with that, they deliberately set off explosions that killed several CP men. Both terrified and outraged, the UP workforce responded by setting off explosions of their own. In the resulting blasts, a number of Union Pacific workmen were buried alive by dirt and rocks. Alarmed that the rivalry between the two companies had turned to bloodshed, officials of the Union Pacific and Central Pacific stepped in and ordered the hostilities to stop. But bitter feelings between rival workmen would remain until the very last rails were laid. No one looked forward to the final laying of the rails more than Jack Casement, Grenville Dodge, Charlie Crocker, and James Strobridge. But as far as Crocker and Strobridge were concerned, there was still one huge bit of business to be dealt with before the Central Pacific finished laying its tracks. Neither had ever gotten over the fact that the Union Pacific could lay claim to having set down 8 miles of rail in a single day. They bragged of it, Crocker remembered, and it was heralded all over the country as being the biggest day's track laying that was ever known. Crocker, in particular, was annoyed at the amount of attention the Union Pacific had received in the nation's newspapers for its 8 mile achievement. And he still had not gotten over the amount of positive press that Durant had garnered for the UP through his excursion to the 100th Meridian. Crocker simply would not let the railroad be completed without the Central Pacific capturing more glory than its rival. Crocker would have Strobridge and his army of workers set a new record by laying down an unheard-of 10 miles of track in a single day. Not only that, but he would make this record impossible for the Union Pacific to beat by waiting to attempt it until the UP's tracks were less than 10 miles from the designated spot for the linking of the rails at Promontory Summit. That way, Casement's crews would not have enough distance left to try to better the 10-mile feat. 10 miles in one day? Almost no one who got wind of Crocker's intention gave it any chance of succeeding. That included Durant, who simply laughed at the idea. Angered by his rival's reaction, Crocker bet the Union Pacific leader the princely sum of $10,000 that the Central Pacific would indeed lay 10 miles of rail in a single day. Durant immediately accepted the wager. The bet had been made in October 1868, Now, 6 months later, on April 28, 1869, Crocker was ready to try to win it. He had waited, as he had planned, until the Union Pacific was less than 10 miles from Promontory Summit, and he had spent as much time as he could spare planning the event. If an impossible 10 miles of track were to be laid in just one day, every step of the operation would have to have been planned in advance. Everything would have to go like clockwork. There could be no wasted effort. When the first faint light of dawn appeared on the 28th, Crocker was more than ready to begin. So, too, were the more than 1,000 Central Pacific workmen whom he had organized into teams, each with a specific task. Aside from the glory that was to be gained, each of the workers had been given another incentive. Winning the bet and gaining the publicity it would engender had become so important to Crocker that he had thrown caution to the wind and promised the laborers that they would receive 4 times the wages they normally received for a working day. That this was to be no ordinary working day was obvious to everyone present. Among the crowd that had gathered to view the much-publicized event were Jack and Dan Casement and other Union Pacific officials, delighted to be on hand to witness what they were certain would be a colossal failure. Their opinion was shared by many of the newsmen who were also part of the growing throng. Suddenly, the air was pierced by the shrill blast of a locomotive whistle. The attempt was on. Even before the whistle had sounded, crews of Chinese laborers had gathered beside dozens of open railroad freight cars loaded with rails, spikes, bolts, and other track-laying materials. Before the sound of the whistle had died, they had begun loading enough of these items for 2 miles of track onto 16 horse-drawn hand cars that they delivered at breakneck speed to crews waiting to lay the tracks. By the time they arrived, workers called pioneers had straightened out the ties that had been laid on the ground the night before. As soon as the rails were unloaded, 8 Irish workmen lifted them onto the ties. There was good reason why these track layers had been specially selected. Each of the rails they hefted was 30 feet long and weighed 560 pounds. The sound of the rails being dropped onto the ties was still reverberating when gaugers quickly stepped forward to make sure that they were the correct distance apart. Within seconds, spikers began attaching rails to the ties. As the spikers made their way down each section of track, tampers followed immediately behind them, hammering down any spike that had not been securely fastened. All the while, the Chinese workers continued racing back and forth between supply trains and the advancing tracks. "The scene is a most animated one," wrote one newsman. "From the first pioneer to the last tamper, perhaps 2 miles, there is a thin line of 1,000 men advancing 1 mile an hour. Mounted men galloping backward and forward. Alongside of the moving force are teams hauling tools." The reporters were not the only ones who were impressed. As Crocker surveyed the scene, his arm was suddenly grabbed by an excited high-ranking army officer who had come to witness the event. "I never saw such organization as this," the military man exclaimed. "It is just like an army marching across over the ground and leaving a track built behind them." At 1:30 p.m., the locomotive whistle that had signaled the beginning of the day sounded again. It was time for lunch. The 1,000-man army had worked nonstop for 6 hours, and they had laid 6 miles of track. As soon as the lunch break began, Strobridge approached the 8 rail setters who had set down every rail over the entire 6 miles. Their work was done, he told them. They had to be exhausted, and he had another 8-man crew ready to relieve them. But they would have none of it. No one was going to replace them. They would see the job through to the finish. And they did. After lunch, the resumption of track laying was delayed almost an hour while workers hammered and bent the rails to fit the curves of a slope of the Promontory Mountains that lay ahead. It did not deter Crocker or Strobridge or their men, who, with their goal in sight, were more determined than ever to reach it. They worked for the next 4.5 hours at the same incredible pace with which they had started the day. At 7 p.m., the locomotive whistle sounded once again. A precise measurement had just been taken. 10 miles and 56 feet of track had been laid. Still, Crocker and Strobridge were not satisfied. They did not want to give the Union Pacific officials or the members of the press who were on hand the opportunity to question whether, in their determination, the laborers had done less than a perfect job. After the historic mark had been achieved, Strobridge, to prove that the grading and track laying had indeed been carried out exactly as they should have been, had almost all the men who had accomplished the extraordinary feat pile onto a long line of railroad cars, whose two heavy engines backed smoothly down the rails at a rapid clip. "We backed down over that 66-foot of grade at the rate of 25 miles an hour," Strobridge later wrote. 1,200 men riding on the empty flat cars. Two Union Pacific engineers were there with their surveying instruments, so there was no guesswork. It was an astonishing accomplishment. In a single day, the Central Pacific's crew had positioned 25,800 ties, had laid 3,520 rails, had hammered 28,160 spikes, and had turned 14,080 bolts. In the process, they had laid an astonishing 240 feet of track every minute. Even more amazing, perhaps, were the accomplishments of the 8 track layers. Together, they had lifted and put into place 2,112,000 pounds of iron. That was 264,000 pounds each, all in one day. In 1917, Strobridge granted author Lardon Fulton a series of interviews for a book Fulton was writing titled Epic of the Overland. In one of the interviews that made its way into the book, Strobridge made certain that he named the 8 track layers. It was an important acknowledgement. Among the hundreds of accounts that were written as the rails were laid across the continent, this was one of only a few times in which a group of workers was cited by name. H.H. Minkler was the foreman laying rails, Strobridge recounted, and the men who handled them were Mike Shea, Mike Kennedy, Mike Sullivan, Pat Joyce, Tom Daly, George Wyatt, E.W. Colleen, and Fred McNamara. Nobody was crowded, nobody was hurt, nobody lost a minute. When it was finally over, Jack Casement sought out James Strobridge and congratulated him for having accomplished what he had been certain could not be done. Dan Casement, however, was not as gracious. Devastated by the Central Pacific's victory and convinced that his Union Pacific could better that mark if they had enough miles to do so, he pleaded with Durant to let him go back and tear up several miles of track so they could prove it. But Durant turned him down. After which, as far as anyone knows, Durant acted in his typical manner. He never paid Crocker the $10,000 he owed him for having lost the bet.